It's the Heckleproof Comedy Podcast with Zach Bolton and Carl Lee and Maddie J. Tonight's episode, film producer Levi Anderson.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Welcome to Heckleproof Podcast. I'm your boy, Carl Lee.
I'm Zach.
And I am Maddie J.
Who is this fella?
I forgot my lens.
Already. This is our producer.
This is the behind the scenes, man.
The producer.
The sandbagger himself, Levi. He actually uses Levi sandbags to hold down the lighting here.
That's true.
That he made himself.
He damn sure does. Got fucking sandbags.
Levi used sandbagging, son of a gun.
Levi cut us some Levi jeans.
We're gonna have to put a still.
This podcast is sponsored by Levi Jeans.
He's responsible,
Mr. Sandman,
for trying to make us
make
look
me
good.
A dream.
It would be a dream if he could make all three of us somehow look good, but you know he's doing his best.
Zach,
if
you open up good. To that light a little bit more,
there we go.
There we go.
If you opened up to your parents,
always
were yeah.
Always worry.
You would just open up
if
a little
I, if
more.
If I take my shirt off, I could bounce a little.
Film some light.
I'll just film the whole thing looking right at that light. Like, yeah. Hey, guys. Always welcome worry. Back to the show.
Oh, man.
It's been a while since we've spoken.
When you see this playback later, though, you'll see that, and you'll be like, oh, I'm never not doing that again.
No, I'll see it, and I'll be like, that's the only time I've ever been seen.
So it's pretty amazing what Levi sees from,
yeah.
from
yeah.
that producer
It'd
seat,
be amazing
man.
If he
dope.
Knew how to place the lights properly so I didn't have to
different move around.
But anyway, this is our producer, Levi.
This is the guy
Anderson.
That makes some magic happen.
Levi is not only our producer, but Levi, tell us about your background with movies, producing, directing, yes. and all that, man.
Well, it's a deep, deep background.
Oh, shit. Well, oh, hey, man.
I'm kind of a jack-off, or jack of all trades.
Yes.
I guess. I think that's what my dad was trying to say.
Yeah,
there you go. Growing up. See, now I'm a comic on the radio.
Yeah, he's like, more yeah,
exactly.
Shit.
Exactly.
Chance for all
exactly.
these jokes I rehearsed forever.
It's not SNL here, you know.
No, I did. I make movies. I make movies that no one ever sees, but I keep.
I've seen the Apocalypse one. I watched.
Oh, yeah. You watched yep, Atomic yep. Apocalypse?
Yep.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I loved it, man. I loved it. I was like, this is pretty cool. Too bad I recognize the fucking area though, because he filmed it out here. I was like, oh shit, that's my favorite gas station.
Right?
That's a 7-Eleven parking lot.
Gas station.
The only gas station we filmed at was like totally defunct, shut down. Must right. have been the one you used to work at.
Yeah, exactly.
It's his favorite one.
Or at least it got shut down after they used it.
No, oh, yeah. I did love that because it was a ton of practical locations, but there was really cool stuff. We were at Pluto Caves,
mm-hmm.
which is like, you know, this underground cave with a skylight coming through. We were Ooh. Some defunct trail that like a car graveyard had been shoved yeah. off the side of the hill and just like all rusted
yep.
out and graffitied. And
Whoa.
Then we went to Montana and filmed it like an actual nuclear underground bunker.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was rad. That was a rad.
How film. Long did it take to film that movie?
That one was 4 weeks.
4 weeks?
Yeah.
And then production time mixed in with that and stuff.
It was probably, well, I got hired onto that. After they kind of had some of the ball moving already, so the script was written, they had most of their locations.
Mm-hmm.
The director and co-producer, who was also the star of the movie, had met at some environmental film festival, and she had been a river guide, so she knew all these awesome locations
oh, dope.
Already.
Yeah.
So they kind of put a lot of those pieces together to build a story around. And then it was actually that the summer that we made that, I did two films back to back that were the first two films ever that I wasn't working with local crew that I'd known. And like around here in Southern Oregon, there's a real tight creative film community and we all work together and on each other's projects and all this stuff. And this was the first time I was like just a green shoe coming in, supposed to run the set, but I don't know these people. So I have to like command their respect because I got to tell them what to do. But it was super awesome. So I came in probably 2 weeks before we started rolling. To just get all the last things tightened up locally.
Nice.
And then I was able to bring in a few actual other local crew members that I had worked with before at that point. So, but yeah, it was a ton of fun. 2 weeks in Northern California, 2 weeks in Montana. Part of that trip to Montana involved the one day off that every crew member gets. I don't, because I was assistant directing, mm-hmm. so I had to get a bunch of stuff together. We were renting a Sprinter van to help transport folks. We just caravaned out to Montana, and I had to pick up this van at 2 in the morning because the guy we were getting it from had a band was using it. They had to wrap their gear out first. So after they wrap their gear out, then I pick up the van, go with him, put the seats back in it. Now it's 4 in the morning. We're getting the U-Haul trailer. Get that hooked up. The lights don't work. Let me figure out the lights. Damn. Take that down to Shasta, 6 in the morning, load everybody up, and then start driving.
Jeez.
I think in Klamath Falls, we all met up in a parking lot, and then I slept for like 4 hours.
Damn.
And then took my turn driving.
That was your day off.
Why the day off?
Yeah.
You got 4 hours.
You said a Sprinter, meaning?
A Sprinter van, those big old like Mercedes mm-hmm. vans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was a dope one. It was like 4-wheel drive diesel. It was like, it was a badass one. But
those are cool.
Then we got to location. It took us it probably should have been like a 17-hour drive. It took us like 23, 24 hours.
Damn.
And I told everyone, like, all right, 2-hour nap and we're rolling.
Yeah, we're here. We got
to yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Get
down to business.
We're short on time.
Yeah, I know that drive. I used to do a lot of tours in Montana. So I used to come leave from here and go that way. So I know about all that, man, that Idaho and Montana roads. Yeah. Man.
Well, beautiful. And you said that it took 4 weeks, you know, on the one shoot. And, like, to put that into perspective, like a big budget film shoots for 4 months.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes 6 months.
Yeah. And it still takes like another 6-7 months to even.
So that's the challenge always of any independent film project is not only is your budget small, but because your budget is small.
Time crunch.
So you have to capture so much in such a small amount of time. It's not the same experience on an indie set that it would be on a set where you have production plan shots.
Yeah.
And everything's going in a perfect sequence. You know, you're fighting lighting conditions in real time, you're making adjustments. So like, what does that involve? You know, when you're talking about I'm in charge, what are all the elements that means?
Well, like you're saying, the industry kind of standard, which comes from the studio industry, is you have a script and you're going to shoot 2 to 3 pages in a day.
Mm-hmm.
A soap opera, on the other hand, will shoot 20 some pages in a day, and that's why they look like shit.
That's a good point.
The lighting is kind of like
that's
this.
A good point. Yeah,
it's just the same lighting like in every scene.
Walk in and out of the same room, and they just cut away so many times you don't realize.
Right.
But so most of the films that I'm doing, my first role is I'll get the script and I'll break it down into scenes, breakable pieces, and you'll figure out how do we take this, rip it apart into puzzle pieces to shoot it in a way that's efficient, and then the editor gets to put it all back together. Mm. And you know, most of my schedules are going to be between 4 and 6 pages in a day.
Right.
And it really does. It comes down to budget and what can you afford and how quick can you get it done. If you have a bigger budget, you can take the time to really set up and do more. When you don't, like, sometimes the great thing is you get forced into a more creative mode. And you're like, okay, we have these limitations.
Yeah.
We have to overcome.
We have to come up with something to make it work.
Think about Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
When people talk about that, because, like, one of his first films that was ever released was such a small budget that when people watch the movie and then they find out how much was spent to make the movie, it's like, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way he did that with that little bit of
money.
Yeah,
exactly. Like,
that was probably the hardest part for him selling it, was that he had shot it for so cheap no one would take it seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, and it's a fantastic movie. There's a whole documentary about how he made it so cheaply and managed. And then, like, that one thing was, like, literally his student project, essentially. Geez. Changed the way movies were made. Because he was able to do so much with so little.
Nice.
Yeah.
That then the studios were looking at their directors like, really?
Yeah.
You charge us really? That much for that?
Exactly.
Robert really? Can do this with this and you charge us.
Yeah, he's got a book, Rebel Without a Crew. Mm-hmm. It is that same process about how he made it. And there are certain things where he's talented. He can be his own cinematographer. He knows what to do. And there's other people that just can't. They envision it, but they need to hire someone competent.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And
every
so,
good movie has a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the bigger the movie, the bigger the crew and the bigger the teams. And
Yeah.
So
I watched Stir Crazy the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor classic.
Yep. Was that the first movie that they really worked in together that kind of started that series of buddy movies they were in?
Yep. And he was supposed to be. Which one came out first, Blazing Saddles or? Well, Blazing Saddles came out in the late
70s. For him. It was Blazing Saddles.
Late 70s, right?
For Gene Wilder, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Richard Pryor was supposed to be the Black Sheriff.
Right.
But he couldn't stay sober.
So that would have been their first.
That would have been.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't trust his ass.
That would have been an interesting change out.
Yeah, for that exactly. But he couldn't stay sober. So, but he wrote for it. He wrote that. But Stir Crazy, the budget was $10 million. Mm-hmm. And they grossed $101 million. Jeez.
Right.
It was the first movie that a black director grossed $100 million. And guess who that black director was? Sidney Poitier.
Yeah,
that was makes the sense director the of fucking Stir Crazy, and so that was crazy. Like,
that's not the first time his name has come up on this podcast. That's funny.
It's not.
No, I think it was episode one. We had a segment,
and then the new Candyman movie just came out.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
what was that budget?
It's in theaters right now.
I don't know the budget, but that was a black female director.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so she just broke records for being the first one to have, I think, opening weekend top movie.
Yeah, I wanted to see that. Did you guys ever see the first one?
Oh yeah.
The first one was dope.
I rewatched it the afternoon before I went.
I always forget
in 92.
I forget that I've seen it, but I have because I remember being. I was pretty young then. I mean, not super young, but I was in high school, and I remember that leaving an impression because of the way it was acted,
mm-hmm.
And it was like such a foreboding job. There's certain people that can do evil, but then there's some people where you're almost a little too convinced. You're like, that left a little.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the show Black Mirror. I've never seen that. That's kind of that feeling where it's like,
yeah, I remember that. My brother.
But it's like certain actors can really do that. You know, they can just really embody. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to ask you. Like in these projects, I'm assuming that everyone's getting paid a little bit of something. I mean, how does that get managed? Is it like a team of sponsors that are putting this thing together?
The budget. I was really like, where the budget come from?
Project more of like, if it's your project, you just raise the funds.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the hardest part is getting the money because it's an investment, mm-hmm. you know? And
true.
The hardest thing to prove is that someone's going to make their money back on a movie that hasn't been made yet. So it's like, until you establish a track record.
And now you have to almost make a mini version of that movie to sell to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of folks break into it, especially the younger, like brand new directors. They'll make some short film.
Shorts. Like prove like the concept, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
I did one. Okay, so this was November 2017, and it was, I gotta be careful what I say now. I think it's about to break out, the real film, but I've seen some secretive stuff on social media. So,
yeah,
but it was a proof of concept trailer. And it was this like action piece from the Book of Mormon. And I was like, I was never read the Book of Mormon. I didn't know there was action.
I have.
Oh, yeah. I never answered the door.
But I don't remember action scenes.
Well, there's even action scenes in the Bible. If
it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty epic ones.
Yeah.
A lot of incestual action, I think, too.
Yeah. Kind of like this episode, you know, bringing on the producer.
Exactly.
A incestual, too. Anyway.
But so this guy comes connection. Out to shoot this thing on the Oregon coast. We have about a day and a half to shoot it, not even two full days. And he had raised more money for that proof of concept to shoot for 2 days than all except one of any of the full feature films I'd worked on at that point.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
And that blew my mind. I was like, holy, you know, and it's, I mean, Mormons have a lot of money.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They don't really do. They own a state.
And they don't really get represented very well
as
in the media.
As it turns out,
they own a state.
They're worth their salt.
Yeah, they own states.
Like there's a little Mormon.
Wherever you set up a Mormon community, you got to pay somebody for that. You know what I mean? Like,
and I feel like they're like, oh, someone's going to finally make us look good in the movies? Oh,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll yeah exactly.
That. Oh, that is a good point. Our last couple showings in cinema haven't been the most positive.
But they got reality shows.
I just heard about this thing called Soaking.
Yeah, I heard about that show.
No, what's it's that? Not a show.
I heard about
it.
It
is a show called Soaking, though.
What is it?
I'm curious.
Oh, I'm so glad I thought of this for the episode. This is great. So this is a Mormon thing. I'm going to be outing it a little
Soaking?
Bit.
Soaking?
So soaking is a sexual practice among Mormon kids. And what it means is like inserting your dick into her and then not moving. Because as long as you don't move, it's still technically not.
What?
Right.
You've already inserted it.
Right. But you're not moving.
And they're already stepping.
You're just chilling.
You're just chilling.
You're just laying in there.
And somehow the person you worship is fooled by this. Somehow they're still worthy of worship, but yet they're fooled by
this. I don't
want to
call it soaking. I want to call it Mormon missionary from
the Mormon missionary.
It gets better. It gets
vanilla.
Better. It gets better. And then sometimes a friend.
Oh, God.
What?
A friend will
push
the bed move.
just so it can get a little.
So then you can.
But it's not on you.
What? My friend is it mean a parent?
I didn't do it. No, thankfully. No.
I didn't do it. Somebody else
but
did
think
it.
About yeah. It. You're going that.
Like Linda Blair, Exorcist
Bear. That far to not have sex. Yeah. Anyway, I just felt like that needed to come to light. If your child ever says to you, like, oh, yeah, me and my boyfriend soaking. Chad were just soaking, and it's not maybe not a hot springs, you might want to look
into it. Yeah, exactly. You might yeah.
ask some questions.
But we don't have a hot tub.
Yeah, where are you soaking?
We don't even have a bathtub.
Do you ever play that game with your lady? The soaking game? Like, you just try and hold in there and see how long you can go and tell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, can we fall asleep?
She don't
like
know I'm playing.
No, can't do it.
Oh. She don't know I'm playing the game. You know, she's just like, are you all right? Why you stop?
You're like, I'm just tired. I'm trying to.
I stopped?
I'm trying the new soaking thing.
I didn't know I stopped.
I didn't know I stopped. I thought we were still going. I'm just relaxed. It's very comfortable.
Exactly.
In there.
I'm just enjoying the moment.
Nice. Why would I want
usually it's like, I was about to come and I need a second.
Yeah, I did.
Let me just soak here for a second.
Leave out being honest. Okay. I got to soak right quick. Hold up. The most. My socks.
The most effective
30 seconds and you start soaking already. What the hell?
The most effective soaking technique is when she starts talking. You're like, oh yeah, I was gonna come.
Right. That is soaking. That's interesting, man. That's soaking. Well. The stuff these
the way they've wrapped their minds around yeah, it, it's not
shit
sex.
They
it's
come
like the,
up with.
I'm a born again virgin thing. So like, you were just you had sex
we
with more people
not
than
born
this
again
weekend.
Virgin. I remember everything. I remember everything. I can tell you about it. Fuck your whole life up. I can't tell you about this.
I just brought that all up to say that, like, if we're gonna make a movie about anything Mormon,
so like soaking in it
coming this fall, soaking
and not coming
on the script, soaking scene,
not coming this fall,
not coming.
Somehow they thought God wouldn't notice.
Somehow
God's like a velociraptor; he only sees you if you move,
and the bed is rocking. But you can't see it. It's the Linda,
I like that
it's
concept.
The Linda Blair.
I like that concept where, like, if you could sin, like, without moving, God can't really see it. It's the movement that attracts him. You know?
Yeah, that's
he's
what it's doing.
The lizard vision. Don't move. Don't move. Jesus
don't
can't
move.
See if you don't
move.
He won't know.
Play dead.
Turn sideways and just fuck that one direction so he can't see the movement.
God's
so.
Like a Ring doorbell. He just on any sort of movement is when he like comes in to see.
But
it.
That speaks volumes though to the commitment level.
Commitment.
Because there ain't no Christian couple of you know that's together that's
Catholic
trying
either.
That hard not to actually
Catholic
have
either.
Yeah.
Soaking.
So but the Mormons are trying. You know?
And how about the gear they have to the females have to wear? You have to wear. The undergarments you wear under their clothes.
Special undies.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not just the women.
Like a girdle? They gotta
wear
a girdle
right.
And stuff?
It's weird, man. It's gotta be the most uncomfortable shit ever.
Well, they do something too where it's like when they finally get to have sex, it's like just a hole in a sheet.
Yeah, that's it. That's a good point. Sheets. Yeah.
That's not just within that religion, though.
That's where glory holes came from?
That's also just for people who are generally...
Glory hole. You got to hit the sound. Glory hole.
I don't know which one it is. Let's try this one.
That's what you feel after a glory hole, for sure. You're like, I should not have done
that's
that.
Nope, that's a chip.
There we
nope.
go.
Wait. Oh, there you go.
You know, but that's not the go back to the wah-wah. Yeah, see, producing this show, I think I should have access to that button.
Oh, that would be dope.
I think
he'll fuck us up. Leave that one fuck us
I
up.
Think when people read that spot on your resume where it says producer of Heckle Proof, that should pop out of your resume. Someday. It should be like one of those Hallmark cards where you push the button. You'll read it on the resume, Heckle Proof Podcast. Why does it say press here?
There we go.
Oh, that's a dope one. Look at us. Learn how that shit. Oh, that's cold.
I got it right here.
Instructions.
Boom. He's got at least six sounds. Of which he never uses.
What's the rim job button?
What's the rim job?
Rim shot.
Oh, rim shot.
Oh, rim job.
Little leprechaun. Little leprechaun pops out from under the table.
Always going for the low hanging fruit. This one.
Who's ass am I eating now? Little leprechaun pops out.
So we got off track a little bit. We were talking about
movies,
and now we're
then we went soaking and
soaking jobs.
Rim shots, soaking.
Anyway, so let's say. Levi has an idea for a movie that Levi wants to make. What's the first step? Is it really fundraising? Is it script writing?
Script should always come first.
Yeah. Script should always be ready.
But it sounds like it doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, it doesn't. Okay. The worst films to be on, sorry if you're watching this, Brad, are...
oh, shit. No way. No, Brad.
You get the latest script.
Literally rewriting the script every single morning with your actors.
Isn't Brad the one I read for? Yeah.
Oh, no.
But nice. And actually, we're getting ready to produce October 24th. We start shooting our next film over on the coast here.
Oh, dope.
So we're going to shoot. That one's a 3-week shoot. So.
Oh, wow.
It's his most ambitious movie with the smallest budget and the smallest window to shoot.
Levi,
which is what I love about these indie
really like shoots. To challenge yourself.
Levi, I was checking out something. I think it was filmed in North Carolina, but the North Carolina had a budget for something that they could do that they could give to the producer, the crew, to fund it. It was weird, like $1 million. Yeah. It was some shit they had, like the state of North Carolina had some type of...
Oh, to encourage film projects within the state.
I think that might have been what, but they were able to fund it for
it
them.
It creates like, tourism.
Yeah, so
that's why they invest.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's like the Goonies house creates...
So how does that shit work? Does like if Montana know you want to film there, there's like, you got to go through the Montana movie.
Right, and actually, and that one, Atomic Apocalypse, part of it was... I think he got a film grant from Montana as long as he...
Yeah, that's it, grant. It there, right? That's what it was, a grant.
And he got a little piece, and the director's actually British, and so he went out and filmed a little chunk back home in Britain just to be able to take advantage of some tax breaks out there. Right. And Oregon has a ton of awesome incentives. It was years back before I ever even knew this would be a career path I would have. Like, I grew up farming, and I was like...
Oh, damn.
I did my placement test in high school. It's like, you could be a truck driver or a forest ranger.
That's something we have in common. Most people wouldn't realize we're both farm kids.
Right. Yep. There we go.
Farmers only.
Oh. You don't have to be a movie producer. Farmers.
I love making movies. The worst part is no one wants to sleep with the assistant director. And that was why I originally got into movies was because I wanted to be James Bond and, travel these awesome places and sleep with beautiful women. But,
I thought that same thing about being a musician too. I was like,
yeah, there you go.
You're gonna land so many girls, and it's like, yeah, but they're the questionable ones,
The questionable.
Is that what you want?
The questionable ones. Yeah.
You can land a lot of fish you don't want to eat too.
That's where the drugs come in.
Yeah. They say there's a lot of fish in the sea. There's a lot of plastic.
There's a lot of plastic.
That's what I find.
Yeah, a lot of pollution.
Do you have a favorite project that you've worked on, or something that you're always like, man, that was probably the highlight of mine. Career so far.
No, I don't think
this really. Yeah, I mean,
this is the Heckle Proof podcast. It's really, yeah, it. Wow. I mean, it doesn't get any better than occasionally I get to film Carl doing his stand up at Chadwick's. That's always an exhilarating moment.
Yeah, he just filmed it, and that shit looks so good, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he used.
What are you using that for? Some promo stuff or?
Oh yeah, always. Because I'm at. It's like I realized I got to just start filming more.
Yeah.
Of my stuff.
That's what every comic needs to do right now.
Yeah,
get a reel going.
Get a good reel going because I've been. A lot of stuff been coming my way for me to submit to it. I'm like, damn, I got to have, I want something more because, some people don't want to watch no more than 5 minutes. Some people don't want to watch no more than 10 minutes. So I want to be able to have some current stuff just to have, okay, they want five, got the five. They want 10, got the 10. They want 25, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But we still got to get you a website.
There we go.
Black Anus is already taken. I think.
What?
Black Anus is already taken.
Yeah, BlackAnus.com is taken.
Black Anus.
We could do. You could do reverseblackdad.com.
I checked.
Reverseblackdad.com.
That's true. It would be cool to have your catchphrase as your web. Like if I was going to have a website, mine would be treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
It definitely would be.
What would yours be?
Mine. Daddy's home.
Right, something creepy for sure.
Creepy.
See how uncomfortable Carl
is. I know.
No, I'm just kidding. Now imagine if Carl would have been female. Like, times that by 13.
Well, you got to.
I don't really have a catchphrase.
Oh, you don't? Got to get one.
I mean, I don't know.
There we go. I mean.
I don't know.
Dot, dot, dot.
Once you go Zach, you never go back.
There we go.
Never go back like a bad restaurant.
I did back when I was starting out in stand-up. We had my buddies and I were like, we got to come up with catchphrases. We got to do a catchphrase set. And so I came up with, I am sleeping alone tonight. And so I did this whole routine about
fuck.
Bad relationships.
He said it was in the beginning.
Yeah. Exactly, man. That's a good point. Said, in the beginning.
Don't judge him on it.
It's like in the Bible.
You want to hear one of my first jokes?
No, you don't. Bad comedy.
I'm doing all these just bad relationship jokes. And, I'm sleeping alone tonight, right? And then as I finish my set, my girlfriend gets up and storms out. And this is at, I don't know if you remember, the Lithia Fountain and Grill in Ashland, the soda shop. Mm-hmm. It's now the Red Zone Sports Bar, whatever. Oh,
yeah, it's okay,
huge picture window right behind the stage.
Yeah.
So I chase her out, and now we're arguing right in front of the window.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh,
God. All those jokes about me. It's like, no, those jokes are about Mark and his girlfriend. Like, yeah. I don't do personal stuff on
that's
stage.
That's exactly. Right. My then girlfriend encourages it. She's cool if I bring up stuff. She likes it.
She loves it. Then why it, did man. You
get she don't even give a shit about that. She just
mine's
like,
a comic. She's been she's been in my yeah. routines, and I've been in her routines for
there we
years
go.
Now.
There we
it's
go.
It's funny. Like, so, I heard a joke not too long ago, and I was like, oh, shit, that she wrote that about me. A normal guy would have been like feeling bad about it. I thought it was funny as hell, man. I love it.
It's great.
I never.
When I get roasted, I love it.
Like, I never dated a female comic. Yeah. Never.
Me neither.
That's interesting.
They're too good for me.
They're
all smarter than I am.
Well, so first of all, like most of them don't exist.
They don't.
You know, it's hard to date something that doesn't exist. Like, I haven't dated many unicorns. No, yeah, no shit. They exist, just not here. It's funny. There's like a ton of female comics up near Portland.
Mm-hmm, a ton.
So
Seattle.
If you want to date female
Portland,
comics,
Seattle.
Portland. That's
actually
the promised land.
Are they really
Portland, Seattle, helps? Sacramento area. Everything except for Southern Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. We have like, you know, a dwindling amount. And we have a rotating door of female comics. It's funny. Like, we have female comics that'll be active for 2-3 years. And
two, three. Exactly.
Drop out for a couple of
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
And then they're like, her friend pops in for those 2 years. And then her friend gets sick of it for doing 2 years. And then all of a sudden you hear this name like, hey, I heard that name.
Yep,
like 2 years
yep, yep.
She's back. And so it's funny. You have this revolving.
Yep.
Cycles.
Exactly, man. Yeah. But a lot of comics, a lot of my boys date female comics, and because it's also like, hey, if you live in Portland, you're gonna come across one. You live in Seattle, Sacramento, Bay Area, but
I think most comics, the reason why it works to date another comic is if you're really out doing it, there's not that many people that understand what your schedule's like, and a lot of girls, you know, in the beginning, they're like, oh, that's cool, you're into comedy, you do this, or you're into movies, you do that, that's really cool. But then when they see how much time it takes away from the relationship,
yes.
it creates yes. issues really like, fast. Oh, of yeah. like. I didn't realize you were into it that much. And it's like, well, how the fuck do you think I'm supposed to make it?
Yeah.
Like, I can't be like
half-assed
exactly. into something.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's really hard to keep relationships if you're in the film business. And it's hard to date someone also in the business if you're around each other all the time. I've seen successful relationships where, like, the guy's an assistant director and the lady's a camera lady, right?
Right.
They're not oh, around damn. Each other all day, but they're in the same industry, so they understand the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the road together, right. They get to travel together, but then they're doing their jobs separately.
So they're not always stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah
but then
you're
still
you
coming
like,
home talking about the same shit.
You no, because there's different drama. There's different drama
okay.
in different departments. So.
But it would suck, yeah, if you like fell for the lead actress and you're the director and then you have a falling out mid-movie and you still got to shoot the last half of the movie and now you hate her.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you take that.
Yeah, you take that. You do something with it now. Do something with
you
it.
You Marvin Gaye that shit up, and just
you weren't supposed to throw her down the stairs. That wasn't in the scene. I know what I was feeling. Can't do that anymore in Texas.
But flings are awesome. Flings happen a lot, and that's like, and you'll see it in social media and the news and stuff. Celebrity couples that always
yeah.
the actors.
Oh, yeah,
the
always.
No, that
yeah.
makes
we met on a set.
That yeah. makes sense because if
on
you've
the
ever
set
been
notebook.
On a set, it's 14 hours of waiting for 2.5 hours of action. So mm-hmm. you're gonna have to find
yeah.
something to do. And usually
we met
each other.
On the set of Debbie Does Dallas.
I think that's why a lot of actors have drug problems. It's just boredom.
Boredom.
It's not like
boredom,
it's really
boredom.
That hard of a lifestyle.
It is, man. That's
the
truth.
Fucking trailer.
What do I do?
It's the truth because you're so busy waiting. Mm-hmm. For the next project and
yeah.
getting you,
I can't even play baseball.
People kissing your
that's
ass.
That's how bad I hate.
You got
waiting.
Money.
I can't even play baseball, so I can't imagine like just waiting forever. Like, here's your 2 hours. You're going to be needed,
yeah.
but you need to be on the lot for the full 8.
Yeah,
because at any moment we might call you.
So I realize actors are assholes. They're like, all right, it's finally time to film. Let's get it done with. And get
because
it
what does that leave out call when you get to that certain point of your career? When they call you to come at a certain time, like you don't have to be on the set until.
Tell you. Tell
what is that called?
Literally just being in the union.
True. You're on the union. That's true.
If you're not in the union, they'll have you sitting there for 12 hours.
Yeah. Is it the call sheet or some shit?
If you're in the union, then you start getting penalties if you're not getting them in and out at the right times.
Yeah.
I even heard one actor was say, oh, it was Jaleel White. Jaleel White, a.k.a. Steve Urkel, said, right. in order for him to keep his health insurance, he has to work, stay busy. He can't be out for no longer than a year.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Oh geez.
Even if it means accepted a stupid commercial.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, damn. Like even if they like just
so he doesn't
like,
have health insurance because I haven't seen him in anything.
Oh, that dude is
he's growing weed now.
He's growing weed now. He got that little
he's got some insurance.
He got that what is that shit called he used? Because he saw Leonardo DiCaprio at the Emmys.
Like a vape pen or something.
On TV and vape. He was like
what does he call it? What's his name?
The purple Urkel or
the purple.
Purple Urkel.
The purple shit.
Purple Urkel.
You always know it's going to be horrible weed when it's a celebrity brand.
Yeah.
That's why I'm glad Snoop Dogg never tried to, like...
That's a good point. He never damn did.
Like, he did some products that you could use to smoke weed, but he was never like, oh, this is like, you know, the Snoop Dogg strain.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know it would have sucked. It would have.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, they're always
the
bad.
Snoop Dogg shit weed.
Until Jim Belushi's on the show, then you'll change your tune on that one.
True.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if Belushi comes on the show, I dare him to change my mind.
The one
thing,
one thing I did like...
We calling you out, GM.
No, I do. Come I would on. Love to get Belushi on the Come show. On. And then he can tell us what he's doing, what efforts he's making to not make shitty celebrity weed, because I'm sure he's working hard to not do that.
Yeah.
And why he can only sell it everywhere except Southern Oregon where he grows it.
Yeah, no, I work for farms like that, too. It doesn't make any sense. They only sell to Portland. Like,
what the hell? I don't know how far it went, but Willie Nelson was trying to do a thing where it was like Willie's Reserve, but it wasn't his weed. It was him using his namesake to help independent growers.
Yeah, right, the Foreman Grill.
I met somebody that was growing.
That ain't fucking George Grill. That's somebody else.
George Foreman never used the George.
He never used, exactly.
George Jr. did.
I love those ideas.
George the Third did. George the Fourth didn't either. George the Fifth, he was.
I love Georgina.
I love the idea that like Shaq ever uses any of those products. That
Shaq don't use no lotion.
Get cool.
Maybe the Icy Hot patches.
Shaq don't use no lotion. Shaq be rubbing.
I really love this arthritis cream. It works really great.
He did that insurance too. The captain insurance.
Shaq does not use fucking lotion, but I know he eats Oreos. I know he eats fucking Captain Crunch.
Papa John's.
And he got to use the Icy Hot.
Oh, yeah. He has
that
the
old big ass fucker.
Sure. But I want to know if when Shaq gets mad, if all of a sudden, like, the mumble goes away, if he's just like, and then another thing, and we would just, and fuck you, same motherfucker.
Yeah.
Just like, right, all of a sudden, just super articulate.
Yeah. When he orgasms, so he's articulate. You
that's what you're like, no.
That was clear. What did you say?
I don't ever want to picture Shaq.
He just did Shakespeare.
Oh, I'm about to go. That's one shot he can't miss.
But Shaq got Papa John's. They came to him and asked him what he wanted to consider.
Part of them.
But because of Papa John's owner made a bad word.
So they had to fix it.
Yeah, so Shaq wasn't going to do it at first, but he was like, I'm not going to get him on that racist dude. He was like, oh, no, he's not the chairman of the board. He's not on anymore. Like,
got him off.
So Shaq was like, all right.
But they had to get their image back.
They had to get it damage control, boy, because it was bad. They were the worst.
Who better else than Shaq? He's like,
yeah, they were the worst pizza.
One of the most loved athletes.
Yeah,
it sucks when you start off having the worst pizza and then you do something like that because you really don't have anything to redeem.
Yeah, nothing to fall from back that?
But our pizza's not good.
And right. Like if you had amazing pizza, people might be like, I mean, how many times did they say the word?
And he actually, and that's what I love when people like rat you out that you think that you just being, you know, this is just between me and you, right?
Me, you, and YouTube.
It's like, between us. Rat your ass off. He claimed that he was only saying what Colonel Sanders said. I was like, no, Colonel Sanders says finger licking good. He didn't say finger nigger good.
Sure Colonel Sanders would want to keep his legacy alive. Yeah, he's smart
Colonel
enough to know.
Colonel Sanders looked like a slave owner, but he didn't act like one. Yeah. He was smart.
Matter of fact, the more you look like one, the more you have to not act
That's
like
exactly.
Oh, man.
It's like Levi here. Colonel. If somebody makes an accusation that Levi is racist, he has to work really hard compared to, say, me.
Yes.
Right. And that's just somebody else being racist and judging us based on how we look.
It happens a lot too. People say, Levi, you look like you'd enjoy a good racist joke. Like,
Why would I enjoy that?
And what is a good racist joke?
Well, yeah, what is
one that you don't tell?
Unless Richard Pryor's doing it or George Carlin,
right?
Because you know they're coming from a healthy place.
Like, what is it about me?
It's a wholesome racist.
Yeah, exactly. It's a wholesome. I can see George Carlin saying that. This is a wholesome racist.
Right. Sometimes you need racism. You need wholesome racism.
But it's funny as shit how people think is like a racist, like, because you know it's only white dudes telling racist jokes. But it's funny how they actually think, like, I got this joke for you. It's like, bitch, don't you realize I'm black? What the fuck is that?
Right.
Like, what just happened?
Except Mexicans will straight up tell you Mexican jokes all day long until you're uncomfortable.
I never had
one. Why do you keep telling me?
I never had a Mexican tell me a Mexican joke. Really? Always had a fucking racist white dude tell me.
It's because they think since you're a comedian, then that's like what you want to hear, stuff like that.
So that's a good point.
They
come
up and they're like, he's going to find this so funny.
Because
he's
a comic.
I always think about that,
and
too.
And I can say whatever
you
I want to say.
You can use this.
Why do people think that that's a good idea?
You can use this.
Like, would you run up to Marvin Gaye and just start fucking singing a random song?
Yeah. Run to Drake, check it out, do this.
Yeah. Would you walk up to a hooker and try to explain to her how to give an HJ? No, you don't. That's why you walk up to a comedian and be like, here,
you can use this.
Here's a joke
you can use this right in the middle of the HJ.
Like,
I
need your stupid ass overshared internet meme joke.
Although, if I'm paying a hooker, the last thing I want is an HJ. Like, they're never good.
That's true.
Right. Especially if you're paying for it. You don't want to pay for that. That's a rookie move.
No, that's a rookie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like getting
a freebie.
It's like getting a vanilla at Baskin Robbins.
I can do for
that's
myself.
A freebie.
No, thanks. I'll have the vanilla.
That's a freebie.
The other 30 flavors.
Popcorn Les Schwab. You can grab it yourself.
Yeah.
I don't have to pay for this.
Exactly. Les Schwab's will take the nail out your tire and won't charge you.
Yeah, so and they give you popcorn.
They'll rotate your goddamn tires, won't charge you. Yeah, exactly.
What do I actually pay for here?
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a meme the other day that said, I like my pussy how I like my tires. And it's supposed to insinuate bald, right?
Oh, hell no.
But then my dumbass... I'm like, no.
I don't want my tires bald.
And so then I post in like, yeah, four at a time and rotate it every 300,000 miles.
Boom. You know? That's a good one, Maddie.
Reinforced with metal and deep grooved.
Oh.
All weather.
Oh, all weather. Four-wheel drive.
Probably used and repurposed.
80,000-mile warranty.
Inflated to 32 PSI. What?
Right. What?
We're underinflated. I prefer mine under.
We have to at our age.
Yeah.
Shit, we talk
about. At our age.
So,
hey, yeah, your guys' age.
back to the topic at hand. Before we get to somehow WAP and start singing that song. Wow. So, what would you consider, like, in all of what you've done in the movies? Me and you have had this conversation, so I know your answer, but what's your favorite part of the filmmaking process now that you've gone through and you've been able to experience things from working on sets and coordinating to maybe just working lighting to just doing editing?
It really is the on-set flings. Those are the best part.
That's why I got into the business.
You mean like really on-set, like happening on-set?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the trailers.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, on the grip truck.
Jeez.
So
you grew up on a farm, so that should be
most of the flings. If it's not the
trailer,
that's
like home.
Trailer. It used to be a livestock trailer. Now,
yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
It's gonna be.
I see where you're going.
It's going to be the grip and the makeup artist. They're the ones that are always getting it.
Grip. The fluffers.
Hey, Maddie. hands. Levi hooked me up with a little roll, and I had to be like baby oil down, and chicks baby oiled me fucking up, dude.
Oh man. Gosh. These girls were going crazy all day. They couldn't wait to oil Carl up. Like,
I mean, you look like
they oiled me the fuck up.
You look like a jar of creatine as a human.
Jar of creatine.
My shot was only like a few minutes if you watched the movie, but I was there for like 3 fucking hours.
Getting oiled down by these
thirsty
white girls.
You guys have been doing it for 15 minutes. We're almost done.
That's how Levi gets women. He's like, hey, so I got this friend Carl, and if you hang out with me, I'll let you oil him up. Like,
you can oil him up.
You know you want to oil him up. Well, he's only got a 2-second scene, but we're going to oil for like 30 minutes.
And that does bring me to one of like, so I worked my way up to being assistant director by doing almost every other role.
Including oiling Carl.
Including being the oil boy.
He's oiling Carl.
In that scene, in that particular scene, one of the frustrating things is I'm an assistant director now, right? I'm coordinating the set. I coordinate with the key. The key is the head of each department. So the key grip is the head of the grip department. The key makeup runs the makeup department. So I don't have the privilege of telling them how to do their job.
Right.
I just have to tell them to do their job.
Okay.
And what you need done.
In that scene with Carl, we have a black guy standing in the corner. We need more light on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not the lighting guy. Right. So I don't get to make that call. So when you watch the scene, it depends on what you're watching it on, whether you can make out Carl in the background when the camera pans over to him.
Damn.
And that's what the
scene. So you partially appeared on TV.
Yeah.
Just glistening darkness.
Just glistening darkness. That's all. That's
you made a partial appearance.
Just
partial appearance by glistening darkness.
So it really is when you work with people, you have to earn their respect to where you can get in their ear a little bit and give them, you know, some creative ideas where they don't feel like you're telling them their job. You know?
Right. You're like, I know you've never worked with a black person before because it's Southern Oregon. So you obviously don't know how to do this, but
Hey, Levi, you remember?
Which is why I keep Maddie in the dark over here, shaded on this side if you're looking the light.
He knows how oily I am, and he doesn't want to have to towel me off every 5 minutes, so he keeps me in the low light section.
I think I text you when I was watching the episode of Dateline. What's up, Shane? We miss you, dog.
Shane Bishop.
Hey. Yeah,
we watched
first it was a D for and your
it
mom.
Was, I think, and actually, Shane produced it. I think it was the one about that actress in Ashland.
Oh, right.
Right.
Who murdered? I think I text you. I think I was asking you if you
worked with her.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I had
because
never
that
with
shit
her.
Was a trip, man. This girl was a fucking whack job. Like,
yeah.
She murdered her uncle over property, and she
understandable. I mean.
I mean, who doesn't want to come right. up nowadays? Like, if you don't have land, you're no but, man. Yeah, you
the only thing the bitch was going to get was a room
go
out of the house
for your land.
She was gonna, but she ended up like getting bailed out and filming a movie on murdering somebody. I was like, ain't you a bold
so
bitch?
Crazy. Yeah. I just wish the movie would have been good because that's some of the best
you would
they could have gotten.
Oh, easily.
That's a good point.
Like, but, she had a really good dry run on that role. You know what I mean? Like, anybody would have killed. To have had
and to be honest, not to shit on
the position she was in.
Nice rim job.
You know what I'm saying? Nice anybody would have killed for her rim job, you know. Wait, what?
But not to shit on the movie. Like, there's a lot of bad movies being made. But if you can just even make one and finish it, like boom, props to you. Because that's above and beyond what so many people that talk shit about movies.
Well, and then there are people who make entertaining films somehow in 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Or like, I mean, you've worked with quite a few different people, but I know you worked with Ron a little bit.
Yeah.
Ron Howard?
Yeah, Hufstetter.
Close.
Oh.
And
Ron Hufstetter.
And Ron is a special kind of human.
Yeah, he is.
like, most directors are not entertaining people. They're people that don't do well around a lot of people. They're kind of
introverted
and a little... Mm-hmm. creepy, evil, genius-y in a weird kind of way. And he is like the guy that you wish would be on camera in the movie because he's hilarious. Oh, yeah. And anyway, I've never personally met the guy, but I've known enough people who have worked on his productions here and there and seen the photos and heard the stories and then seen some of the films that he's produced too. And it's interesting what he's capable of doing with, you know, such a small amount.
Mm-hmm. He gave me my first starring role in a feature. Mm-hmm. So I've always had the passion to be an actor. I'm just never had the chance to really pursue that and get trained. Right. I'm great at slapstick. I can fall down and spill things everywhere really well. I had a buddy.
I've been in a couple things where I did stunt work, and it's awesome.
I had a buddy tell me one time, he's like, don't take this wrong way. I don't like Jim Carrey at all. But you remind me of Jim Carrey. And I was like, that's one of the greatest things I've ever heard.
Right,
like,
right.
Really?
I love Jim Carrey.
Right. But so I had a buddy. He was a camera guy, and he'd seen me. We have this horror film festival coming up, actually, in just a couple weeks. We're going to launch the Killer Valley Horror Film Festival for the 14th year.
Oh, damn.
Streaming 3 weekends in a row, 3 different film blocks. And when we were first starting out in, like, 2006, 2007.
And doesn't the audience vote on that one, too?
Maybe it was before then. No audience voting on that. Okay. Well, they vote by whether they buy tickets or not. There you go. That's how the audience really always votes. But we were filming these little short films just to kind of tease the festival, you know. And it was basically me on the run from zombies. And I eat an energy bar for people on the run from zombies. That makes me explosively shit myself. And somehow I get away.
Shit. That's hilarious.
And then we did the follow-up the next year, Gog Juice. Now it's an energy drink for someone. I break out of the cabin I've been hiding in. My pants are all blown out. And I have explosive diarrhea on these zombies to get away. And then we did a follow-up. And now... I find this adult diaper to put on over my blown-out pants and find the Gog Dog, this rancid hot dog for people on the run from zombies, and I have this gastrointestinal explosion that just shoots me out into outer space, and I crash land on a beach, finally safe, until the zombie crashes behind me. And so we've done all these things together over a few years, and he's like, you know, I've seen you, shit yourself a lot, but I feel like... You could do a speaking role.
Right.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
I think now you've done enough emotional work.
I trust you.
So Ross Williams, he's another local fella, awesome editor, good camera guy, director as well. He's one of the three of us, Randy Grandstrom, Ross Williams, and I put on this Killer Valley Horror Film Festival. So he put me in this short film called Self-Inflicted. And it's basically this guy that just abuses himself, sadomasochist, because it's the only way he can feel alive. But he's looking for love. The only problem is these women keep realizing what a fucking weirdo he is.
Right.
And my girlfriend at the time, I just caught her cheating on me the second time. So this time it was for real. So I believed it. And I was like, this isn't acting. This is therapy. So So I was like,
true.
It was a good time.
It was perfect timing.
I can see that.
Just like cutting for real, listen to My Chemical Romance and shit off camera.
Because that's a good point, Levi. I think a lot of actors who we think, like, because we get so starstruck sometimes we see somebody, and they don't want to fucking be bothered.
No.
Because the actors, I'm like, you got some of like method actors. Mm-hmm. Who really get into that character. And it actually it's some type of detachment from their normal shit. And really so, is. And then you come across some like Christian Bale or somebody in the public and they're like, no, I don't. It's like, and you fucking assholes. Like,
yeah, that's always been
he did his job. He entertained you, bitch. The mechanic was great.
That's always been my point, man. If you really respect an entertainer, you see an entertainer out in public or something like that. The only thing that person wants to hear from you is, hey, thank you, man.
Yeah,
That's it. I agree.
Yeah. That
I
is
appreciate
it.
Your work.
I appreciate your work. It's done a lot for me. I watch it all the time. And leave it at that. Just keep walking because, man, that person, it's just a person. They're out there doing their thing that day. They don't necessarily have 15 minutes to listen to you, you know, go on and on about all your favorite moments in their career because guess what? As soon as you're done talking, you have nowhere to go from there.
Right.
And now it's just awkwardville because you're now engaged this person's time and you have nowhere to go because you've just told them you just vomited all.
Yeah, it's like when I
just tell them thank you.
When I get booked with big names, I'm the type of guy like I'm gonna stay out the dressing room because I know this is their shit. But they want me in there, and I just keep quiet and I allow them to facilitate the conversation because I don't want to just be like because we got fucking Thursday through Sunday to work. It's
like, I remember when I got
I'm
to work
give you your with, fucking space.
Yeah. I got to work with Corday, and I didn't really even know who he was at the time. I just said, there's another guy in another show, right? And then the day of the show, a friend of mine's like, wait, you're on what? Hey, I'm on this show with Corday.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I'm like, yeah, it's later tonight. You know, I'm still not understanding. Mm-hmm. And so he starts explaining who this guy is, right? And I'm like, oh, damn, he's got some cred. You know, he's done some things. And so it was interesting because that night I'm sitting there and Corday, if you see him before a show, he is focused, man. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he'll talk to you right up to about 15 minutes before he goes on, and it's almost like a switch flips. And even if he was in the middle of a story, just boom, power down, pre-show Corday happens, and he's looking at his notes like any other comic. But it was so funny because I was talking to him for a minute. He was real personal. Are personable, and then I realized, like, midway through, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm talking to somebody who's probably not used to people talking to him this way. Like, I'm just talking to him, it's cool to be here, and where are you from, and everything. And then after the show, he even said something about it. He's like, hey, man, I appreciate talking to you, because, like, you weren't asking me about all this that I was on and who I worked with.
Yep.
It's like, you'd be surprised how many people will ask you nothing but that, you know, and here you're just asking me, like, oh, what are you doing in town? What are you going to do after this, you know?
Yeah, Levi booked me with Kyle Kanane.
Oh, he's my favorite.
Yeah, and Kyle, that motherfucker got some serious credits. People don't know. Kyle was the voice of Comedy Central. Comedy Central present. He did all, every time. Yeah, cool. Every time you hear a Comedy Central advertisement. Yeah.
He's on so many cartoons.
And this dude
well.
Got oh, so many cool. specials. The dude is just like a true artist. He's like your comic's favorite comic, that dude. Yeah. And when Levi booked me, I was like, okay, you know, I ain't gonna be all on this dude shit. But when we all were outside instead of standing in front of the Tyler Club, and I just went up there, hey man, and introduced, and I gave him a hug. And he appreciated that.
Yeah.
Because you know what I mean? He was like, oh, you a hugger? I was like, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I
that guy. Because
I really don't give a
such a cool dude.
I have told. I think I had a conversation with Levi at one point. I was like, if you can ever get him. You know, now with the times, he's blowing the fuck up. Like, get him while you can get him.
Well, and I got to give a shout out to Mikey Spark up in Portland now, I guess. He's the one that he
had the connection.
Kyle was reaching out. He was going down to Humboldt County and looking for somewhere in Medford to perform on the way down. And it wasn't something that would time up with Chadwick's, I think. And it was just like, hey.
Yeah, it would.
Mikey's like, hey, can you get him at the town club? I'm like, fuck yeah, I can.
Fuck yeah.
And it was a killer show. Yeah. And I've seen him now 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a fan of his for a minute, his comedy most specifically. Not necessarily his voice work. I didn't really follow him there.
Yeah,
To me, he was a fresh voice in comedy. He was doing something that sounded different from everybody else. And his jokes are so smart that's what I love the most about him. And personally, though, going to see a comic, if you see a comic the same time in the same year, you run the risk of seeing the same set.
Mm. You do.
That's normally how most of them work. I saw him 3 different times in 1 year. Didn't repeat a single joke at any of those performances. Wow. It's like, and Carl will tell you, I respect that more.
He does.
I'm mm-hmm. a writer, so mm-hmm. I like comics. I have a lot of material that, I love it. That's why I always say with Carl, like, you've got so much material. Even if you forget this year's material, you have 8 years of material to draw mm-hmm. from.
Right.
And exactly. I envy that because, you know, I'm only 3 years, 4 years into the right. game. I don't have that much mm-hmm. material to draw from, but that's what I love the most. And expecting to go see him do those same jokes and then having a whole nother routine mm-hmm. was just like such a treat.
And that night at the Town Club, he did two sets.
Different sets.
This was his idea. It's like, let's do two. Like,
I'm yeah.
like,
yeah,
I mean, it's more money for him. So
yeah, and I wish I could have did a second show, but I had to get up early. But it was fun, and I didn't get to hang out because I had to jet and get, you know, Benadryl and Ambien start kicking in.
and that's what I loved about when I started doing those talent club shows. Like, I started out doing comedy here locally, and I was just kind of getting mm-hmm. burnt on years and years of doing it locally. I didn't really mm-hmm. want to hit the road and make it my career. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the films. That's my passion. That's what I really feel like I should be doing. Comedy is an outlet that I love. Like mm-hmm. all my family's mm-hmm. musicians. I didn't have a musical bug.
Yeah, right.
Jokes are my instrument, you know. But when Maddie and Ben started kind of taking over the local scene, I was like, sweet, let me just try and do this show at the Talent Club. I can get, you know, team up with Carl. If you got a feature coming into town a day early, let's give him a headline shot a night. Chadwick's getting to really some time to hone their stuff before they get to Chadwick's, you know. And I can get some local guy to feature and start getting some mm-hmm. stage time. And it's kind of that midway point from the local scene to, you know, the Chadwick stage. Yep. It's like,
and comics love that, man. A lot of these guys, they don't get big shots, you know, so they get to do something with Kyle. It's like,
man.
So I think I got four different comics, two to feature and the show and two. And Kyle, every single comic that was up there that night, he was at the door listening to their set.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
That's why I like him, man. He is like a genuine good human.
Yeah.
But he happens to be just hilarious, mm-hmm. you know, and most comics that I've met that were once like your hero, after you meet him, you're kind of like, oh, that guy's.
Yeah. Because I didn't know what to expect with a lot of them.
He's not funny, and he's mm-hmm. not real personable either.
I didn't know what to expect, man, when I came across, like, when I got booked, like, and I knew I was going to be showing up. Because sometimes, like, what I did with Monique was she only wanted to work Friday and Saturday night. She didn't want to do Thursday, Sunday. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, and also with Gary Owen. Mm-hmm. So I would close the shows, mm-hmm. the slow nights.
Oh, I see. Right. That last late crowd that straggles
I'm
out.
The slow night guy. Yeah. So when the like Friday and Saturday, two shows each night, boom, it's like, it's on. They're there. They want to do that shit. But I don't know what to expect. I know they're going to come in. It's like, let me just leave the dressing room. But some of them turn out just to be some of the most amazing and coolest people. And you're right, man. I'm sitting there like, oh, shit, I'm working with you. I saw you on TV. Oh, my God, I'm looking tripping like since I was. Then when they come in, be some of the most sweetest and coolest people, it's like, wow. Right. Didn't expect that. But because also, too, I think what they appreciate is me knowing how to know my place. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I'm stepping back. Because
absolutely.
When you get booked, you get booked to compliment their show. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. Like the booker's looking like, hey, I think you'd be a good fit. So I was like, oh, perfect, cool, I appreciate that. So you go in and you make sure, okay, I'm going to do exactly what he brought me in to fucking do, is make sure that show starts off, boom, and it's just great. And other than that, after that, it ain't fucking about me.
Yeah, right. And that's what people get hyped to see them.
That's what people don't realize, too. Like the best openers, they don't bring 100% of what they can do.
That's
they
a good point.
They give you the best 80% because they're leaving you room to take that energy and just mm-hmm. blow it up. Like if your opener hits them in an Eddie Murphy way before you even hit the stage and has them like faces hurting before they're, and then you take the stage, they already want that guy back.
Yeah.
Mm. They don't want you anymore. Like bring back the guy that made me feel that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So like a good opener, you're not trying to bring your AA game. I mean, in my opinion, like every time I've ever opened for somebody else, if they're the feature or the headliner comic, it's like, I'm not bringing my best game.
Exactly.
I'm bringing my best show for that set.
For that set, for this, for what we're doing.
Getting the people right, to, in my opinion, to like an 80% of where they're needing to be. If you can get them there.
That's a good point.
Then let your headliner mm-hmm. work that 80 to 20. That's the funnest part of comedy is when the guy before you gets them to that 80% and you still have some work to do. Because if that guy before you brought them to the peak of where they're going to go, you don't have any room to work with.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be as memorable. It's hard to like really keep that energy up. But if you start at that 80%, you can in an hour, you just gradually take them up. And then at the last 20 minutes, you have them at that 100%. Mm. They're going to remember that.
And then I drop something really offensive to close with so that he's the I was going to be like, oh, like what the fuck? I want these fuckers right. back again.
I can't follow that. What the fuck you do that for?
Or,
I can't follow that.
Or if it's not working, then acknowledge it. Right before the main act comes on, you know, say something funny like, yeah, and anyway, so our next act paid me $1,000 to suck tonight. So anyway, here comes Carl. You know, acknowledge it a little bit, you know. If you're
exactly. Because I would say shit like, I would get on stage and be like, so, and doing some of my set, and then I'd be like, oh, by the way, Earthquake ain't coming on tonight. Right, yeah. He's in the back tied up, so yeah, he ain't you got two more hours of this shit.
I hope you like me.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like Carl's like great at introducing, like, a good example, I have a friend that does this with music, and it's like whoever he's introducing that night is like his current favorite band. That's the way he'll introduce him, like my very favorite band.
That's
and it's
it,
funny because I remember like the first time Carl introduced me, he was like, oh, Matty J coming up to the stage, one of my favorite comics in the area. This man's funny. You got to check this cat out. He's great. Da, da, da. And I was like, oh, man, he means it. And then I found out just what he does. I was like, damn.
But you know,
he doesn't even actually believe in my act.
But what's so funny is I just had two dope-ass comics. I had Michael Harrison out of Canada / New York now, and I had Robert Amato out of Sacramento. Both of them are hilarious, I mean, killers, and they my boys. We talk off stage a lot, and I had the same love for both of them, so you're right, man. I'm freaking them over. Like,
it's my favorite like, comics yeah, I've ever like, heard.
Okay, this is my favorite comic to do 30 up front.
And I remember my buddy that introduces the rock shows, he had a band call him out on it, because they actually, he's told them before, you guys are actually my favorite band, right? And so he had a band call him out. They'd seen him open somebody else up and say, this is my favorite band in the Valley. And so they were straight up like on Facebook Messenger, what do you mean they're your favorite band? Yeah. Like a hurt 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And he responded back and he goes, you know who my favorite band is? The one that's currently paying me.
Exactly.
And I love that
that's
response.
Hilarious.
That's show business, man.
That's
it's
show
not
business.
Personal.
Yeah.
It's not personal.
But the thing is, man, like, to me, it's a brotherhood. And I fuck with dudes hard. Like, there's some good dudes in it. And they just my boy. And we talk so much off stage. We, you know, they produce the shows, want to get me involved and all this stuff. They just always checking in on me. And just, you know, I mean, even Michael, who came in town, I was able to connect him with, like, Nick.
Right.
You know, Nick from Ghostlight. Get Nick. In, so he brought Nick up ready and let Nick open for him. I'm just doing a little shit like that. I was able to connect a girl who I met in Grants Pass who became like my little homie. I connected with Mike because she wanted to go to New York. So he got her some work in New York. Then he knows she's from Sacramento. So have her come up to ready. And right. also, so it's like, and it's just a brotherhood, man. And just like, and it's good people.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. It's some comics that are dickheads who I don't fuck with, who I would never right. fuck with. But even if I don't even like you're not even like you might the people might think you're funny, but on stage they see you're funny. But I'm sitting back like you fucking dick,
right?
You bitch,
exactly. Like I know how much you don't want to be here
yeah.
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
How much you hate
yeah.
this area?
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of them like do. That. They hate this area, and they come through and they'll pretend to bullshit like it. Mm-hmm. You know, but then they'll be talking shit about it. And it's like, I'm not going to book you again.
Right.
Like, you talk shit about my town, you think you're going to get booked?
And again? And you Sorry. Meant it, motherfucker. You weren't yeah. just up there, yeah. like...
It wasn't just for
pointing
fodder.
Out little silly shit like Trader Joe's and shit. No, right. you actually talking shit about people like
that. Yeah. You meant the cracker in Cracker yeah. Barrel, I know.
Exactly.
So is it that same way with, like, within the movie thing? Is it that you... You talked about you have your local film people. You right. all kind of work together and give each other opportunities and...
Yeah, and it really is. That's the best way to keep working is you just have a work ethic mm-hmm. and show up. That's really all it is. Like, comedians and even actors, you know, they get a lot of crap for being divas and stuff, but the biggest divas are always the cameramen.
Oh, damn.
That's why I got three cameras now, because I'm...
Oh, there we go.
No, but...
Three cameras deep.
There's the ones that you can tell are just in it for the fame and they're too good for everybody once the camera stops rolling or once right. the lights go down. And then there's the ones that are just workers and they found this awesome opportunity to do something that they love and like, oh, wow, I can make
can
a career
do
this.
A job.
They kept that work right. at like, I worked with, not to name drop.
but I'm going to.
I got to work with Bill Pullman for 3 weeks.
Nice. I remember the pictures on that.
I was just thinking about him for some reason, because that dude is amazing.
And the guy was so freaking cool headed nonstop. I got to work with Rita Wilson on the same project, Tom Hanks' wife, right? Mm-hmm. And she was getting a little bit of attitude from, you know, not to her face, but everyone like behind her back for being like, oh, she's so above us, and she's name dropping. It's like, it's not name dropping when you actually
have
dinner with Martin Short.
Consistently, motherfucker.
Because guess what? She doesn't have other stories.
Yeah.
But those are the people she's with. Yeah.
But she's used to a higher caliber of, environment than Klamath Falls, Oregon, you know?
Oh, come on. Well, be happy with Klamath Falls.
You know, and I'm driving Bill to set one day, and it's a 30-minute drive. I got to pick him up and get him to set. And I'm just like, I don't try, you know, he's doing his lines most of those mornings. I don't try to get in his head and just have this, like, oh my God. But I'm just like, you know, something about you, like, so we had this wedding scene, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to do this wedding scene in the movie, and everyone's freaking out. The wardrobe is like, oh my God, we got all these wedding dresses, all the makeup, this, that. And he's just like, everyone's freaking out. He's like, just like a real wedding. Right? And I asked him, I was like, just curious, like, did you grow up like farming or labor work or any of that? He's like, yeah, I grew up on a dairy farm. I was like, you can tell, like, that work ethic got carried into this entertainment field.
That's a good point.
And it's just, that's this level of just, I'll just say it again, work ethic. It's just about showing up, having a good attitude, and you'll get way farther than someone that has great skills, but it's just a dickhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. You know? I've always been told, too, like, in a way, it's that who you know kind of thing, but it's who you know to be good to work with. Like, so if I'm making a movie, I want to fill that movie with people that are good to work with, that are going to be malleable and listen if I have an idea or try to meet my vision, versus people who will look good on the list of credits but may not actually, may fight me on my vision, or may say like, oh, I've been in so many movies, don't try it that way.
Yeah, that's why, what's his name? Pulp Fiction.
Tarantino?
Yeah, that's why. Look at the core he works with.
Yep.
He loves them to death. He loves them for, like, you got, I forget another name. What's the guy that's in all his movies? He was just in A4.
Christopher Guest, that one.
Damn, I can't remember his name. Kurt Russell.
Mm. Oh, right.
He loves Kurt Russell. He puts Kurt Russell in everything. He puts Samuel. All these guys from years, he's just been putting them in because he just loves what they're about and what they bring. Right. And also, he went to Jamie Foxx and told Jamie Foxx, filming Django, you're going to have to leave this Bentley shit at home, this Louis Vuitton bag and shit. You're going to have to leave that shit at home. And you're going to have to really get into being a fucking slave.
Right. If you're going like, to pull this off.
Because Kunta Kinte did not have a Bentley, motherfucker. Yeah.
He didn't have an iWatch.
He didn't have he didn't have fucking assistants. You got to leave all that shit at home and really be humble and get into your
no shit.
And that's what Jamie did. Jamie said he had to go right back to just like let everything go and get into that, like.
And that's the thing, like, if I was on a Tarantino movie, that's the time to be a method actor and really get into your shit. Mm. I've seen other actors on these low budget pieces of shit that we make. They're all pieces of shit. Sorry, Brad. They're beautiful films.
He said, sorry, Brad.
That's the theme of the show.
You'll have some actor who's just starting out. He's like, I really gotta get in this, and it just destroys them.
Like, what's my motivation? You're motivated.
Like, hey, take it easy, man. This film's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere.
Your life to be like,
Shit's not even going to be at Circle K.
What do you mean? Find your motivation. You're an extra. Just fucking stand there. Your motivation is
you don't even have a line
because you look like her. That's why you're here. Just stand there, look like her, bitch.
My motivation.
But it is, but we bring the same people back if they're
mediocre but good
to
work with.
Good people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look how many actors that have made it are mediocre.
Yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's
a lot.
And it's not necessarily that every actor is going to be phenomenal. There's a lot of really great actors that have been in things for years and you don't know their names, but you've seen them, like Rip Torn, guys like him, you know. It's like, how many films has that guy been in?
Yeah.
If you look at his IMDb page, it looks like a fucking scroll out of the biblical time.
Yeah.
You know?
Those are the best actors and actresses, like Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. Oh, God. He's my favorite villain. Paul Giamatti's my favorite villain. He played in that stupid movie called Shoot 'Em Up.
Oh yeah,
it's the dumbest. It's like a gun movie that makes fun of gun movies. So it's a send up, but it is phenomenally well done, and it's one of the funniest pieces of cinema I think that's come out in the last 10 years as far as pure comedy. But then they cast this guy as a psychotic bad guy, And Paul Giamatti does not fit the mold of a psychotic bad guy. However, in this role, he puts out like one of my favorite bad guy performances ever. And it's really believable because unlike every other movie bad guy in history, when shit goes wrong, they're always like more convinced they're still going to be mm-hmm. okay. They're just like, it's okay that he killed 27 of my men because now we have the plasma rocket.
Yeah,
they're always more confident, right? Yeah. And in this movie, as shit goes wrong for him, he gets more angry. And
yeah, he, yeah, exactly. Like visibly, yes, yeah.
Visibly shaken, yeah, like,
he's losing
fuck!
It.
Yeah, he's all like, his... and he's like unraveling, and he just lets it happen, which is so great, because every other villain, it's like, you know,
yeah, maintains exactly.
Like steely.
Yeah, he crawled out of there. So I got one arm left.
Exactly.
It's just a flesh wound. Yeah. Who's the actor? I can't think of his name. Steven something or other. He's the stapler guy in Office Space. He took my stapler.
Oh, yeah.
If you actually start paying attention, that guy's got so much range. He's in
a ton of things,
Barry,
too.
He impressed me in Barry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, damn, this dude is good. Like, I've really got to see this dude is good. Like,
he was in Dodgeball in a weird spot, too, and he's got a great, great role in Dodgeball. He's in a lot of... He's also in a movie called Rolling Kansas. It's in one of my... most favorite it's a movie you see a lot on TV like late at night, and it's supposed to be a drama, but it really ends up being a comedy. It's got some great performances, but he has one of the best roles in that. But I think my favorite thing for him is where Oh Brother Where Art Thou. He's the the music producer in that.
Yeah
I gotta look him up because it's killing me that I can't think of his name, but and he was the boss on News Radio.
That was his first thing. Yeah, I can't remember his name.
It's got to be Steven something, right? Let's see how bad I am.
But yeah, that's true. God, News Radio. That brings back some memories. That's how old I am.
Steven Root.
Woo.
I was halfway there.
He was a director as well, I believe. He was a producer. That's right. He had a lot of producer credits.
Oh.
Could have been. That's the one shitty thing about being in the movie business is everyone expects you to know every movie and every actor. I'm bad with names already. I already forgot my mom's
name. That way with
that's hilarious.
I'm that way with comics. Like I know all the classic older comics, you know, and like I'm talking about things like The Show, Dean mm-hmm. Martin, and like most new comics have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Rooster Cogburn, who the hell?
Yeah,
is that?
Exactly. Like yeah, Mama's Mabel.
Only the greatest fucking ain't that a character restaurant? Ever. So yeah, it's interesting to me because I've always thought anytime I've spent behind a camera of any kind, it's definitely a you either have it or you don't kind of thing. And I think for me, like, it's possible I can kind of do it when I really focus, but I'm always in awe of people who just naturally look comfortable and mm-hmm. real behind a camera because I certainly feel like I don't. Like, I watch shit that I'm in and I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I
stick out.
And I think everyone's more critical of themselves, so you'll see things that no one else notices, but I'm the same way. Like, I would love to be a great actor.
Right.
Who knows I ever will be, but like taking like these pratfalls and these, you know, shitting all over zombies to get away. I get a cameo in this next movie.
Think about Simon Pegg though. That's how he came up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the ridiculous mm-hmm. mini roles that propelled him into being something.
You know? And how many times have I tried to shoehorn myself into being like, just, you know, this one character in one scene and no, leave that. It's not for you. But this one, I get pulled over by a mermaid. And I claw my way out of the sea 40 minutes later in the movie, barely hanging on to life. Right.
Oh, like, and in this one, you're a child molester.
Yeah, that one you can do, Levi. Yeah. You can claw your way out of the sea just fine. Yeah, you don't have to really deliver any lines for that.
If you did get typecast, it would be an odd. That would be the name of your typecasting. Just odd. Odd roles. Odd roles.
Or the guy who really likes good racist jokes. We got a role for a guy that really loves racist jokes, right, but only good racist jokes. Levi, would you like to come and read for it?
I feel like you would also work really well as the questionable uncle in almost any story. Like you could be the questionable uncle.
Play the person you are in real life.
But it's not like you don't know why it's questionable. It's just like, no, sweetie, don't play over there.
Yeah.
You know? It's that kind of questionable. Yeah, why, daddy? I don't know. Just don't.
I don't know.
Just don't. I'd be more comfortable if you stayed away from that man.
Gosh.
He has a look. So, like, how do you see it evolving? So, like, what you've done so far... I know you have goals. You've told me your goals are to, like, just do more work because you spent a lot of time working on comedy and you want to kind of renew your focus.
Like I worked myself up because I fell in love with film. I didn't know it existed as a real thing, mm-hmm. you know, for someone mm-hmm. like me. And I had moved down to Ashland to go to SOU, right? And my cousin had just graduated as a theater actor in New Jersey. And he was like, oh, Levi, I only tell this to people jokingly, but for you, you should do stand-up comedy and be an actor, for fuck's sake. And I'm like, oh, okay. So SOU, they got the theater department, mm-hmm. the Shakespeare Festival. I was like, oh, I've never done it before. I'll go to SOU. I'll be in the Shakespeare Festival in mm-hmm. 2 to 3 years, and I'll make it. Mm-hmm. And then I got down here, and it was just like, theater work is a grind. Like, props to anyone wow. that makes it in theater as an actor. Like, behind the scenes, set construction, that kind of side, lighting design, there's awesome, awesome talent there. But to make it as a stage actor, it's a fucking grind.
I bet. Like, I bet.
The movie Black Swan, it's about ballerinas, but mm-hmm. that applies to theater actors. Like, they have to grind and compete with so many people. So I got there, and working class background, I'm like, here, I'm paying for classes. Mm-hmm. Teach me how to act. And they're like, no, you build sets for 2 years, and we might let you audition for an acting class.
Wow.
And I was like, nah. And then everyone was in the spotlight. We'd be after class just partying, and everyone's got the spotlight on all the time. And I'm like, ah, this really isn't my
thing. Yeah.
Right.
So I found this little goof-off video class. There was no major in it. It was just something, you know, for some fun credits. And the professors were like, hey, here's a camera. Here's how it works. Go shoot a couple angles of whatever you want. Come back. We'll teach you how to edit. Full creative That's control dope. Right out of the gate. We didn't have to do Tennessee Williams. We didn't have to do Shakespeare. We got to make up our own shit. And I fell in love instantly.
I
took every video class. It. I did my capstone film. I did a second capstone film. I helped my buddies do their capstone films. We got the first ever student film screening at the SOU in the Mies Auditorium. They just built it. And it was just like, boom, my eyes opened up.
And you guys kind of built that film festival up as well, right? That wasn't a thing that existed?
Well, I don't know. I think there's a student film festival now, and we didn't create that. We had just did our first ever student
the horror one, though.
The Killer Valley Horror Film Festival. Yeah. And now we also have a Killer Valley Comedy. Killer Valley Comedy.
Yeah, I saw that. Festival. Yeah, I saw that.
So, because there's always kind of
and
a
And I
hybrid.
Still don't have an invite.
Damn.
It's all online. You'll get the email.
You'll get the email.
Yeah, that's what he always
It's
says.
All virtual this year. We had to do it last year for the pandemic, and then this year it's just like... People are still sketchy about crowding into a theater.
Yeah, so.
But it's really awesome because we got filmmakers from all over the globe and they can't travel to Ashland to watch their movie, you know?
Right.
So it's like now they can and their friends and their family can log in and just watch it together. They can That's have viewing cool. parties. It's mm-hmm. like, Heck we don't care if you buy one pass and have 100 people watch it. We don't really give a shit. It's just about sharing each other's creations. It's all about, it's that community right. thing, just like comedy. It's like, mm-hmm. it's building each other up. And it is. So I love it. I love it with so much heart. Last night, reason my hair's so messy right now. we were recording promos last night, so I was all head to toe makeup as this creepy grave digger, like just boils off my face, lights in the graveyard, and just because I do stand up, they're like, oh, we don't need a script, Levi, just wing it. And
right, you'll be fine.
Yeah,
we have to do.
You know
intro.
What to do as a creepy boily guy.
Yeah,
creepy intro, boily uncle. Intro, and closure for all three film blocks. About halfway through, I'm like, I ran out of. Fucking puns for this graveyard filmmaking shit.
Right. That's true. How zombie can you be?
But it's so fun because it's like, it's just, we're creating it. It's again, Ross, Randy, and me, three guys. And of course, Randy's family is always there to help out. They're awesome folks too. His daughter, Brittany, and his wife, Michelle. But it's just creating with family, and it is family. I kind of grew up farming and then I worked restaurants to get myself mm-hmm. to college. Mm-hmm. And I always compare film work to restaurant work. Because it's like everything has to happen in prep or you're going to get fucked when that rush hits.
So I like
you're not
that.
Not prepared. And then when it hits, it's work, 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 go, go, go. And sometimes, you know, the passion gets the best of people and attitudes can fly. But at the end of the day, you all have a drink together, you talk it out, and you go into the next mm-hmm. day. And as soon as that film is wrapped, all, like so many of my best friends and family are made through the film business.
Right.
And it's awesome.
Because it's like a thing you had to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a thing you want to do. Sometimes it's a thing you have to survive when it's a creative mm-hmm. project. Because I know I've been on shows where it's like I couldn't wait to do the show. You know, like we did that great thing at the Criterion. Mm-hmm. I couldn't wait to do that show. Like
that was an awesome
I like working with all those guys.
Yeah. You know exactly. What I mean? Yep.
But I've also had comedy shows where I'm like, oh, man, I agreed to that.
Man, when I did.
But I tell you what, man, you still got to perform. And it's just like an actor. You can't show up to a set and decide 2/3 of the way through the movie that you're not into it anymore. Because if you do, you screw everybody else
that's
on
true.
The production.
And that's the thing is sometimes you'll get through it by being like, well, at least there's a paycheck. But that's the wrong attitude.
That's the wrong attitude.
Because I've met so many guys. So we did this film, Besetment. This was the first feature film I did with Brad. This one we like, right?
This one we and, like.
We like them all.
With Marley? With Marley?
Marlon. Marlon.
Marlon, with that one, right?
She was one of only two actresses, I think, ever in history to have a kissing scene with Elvis in his movies.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so. She was Bruce Lee's love interest in the movie.
Yeah. So she works with us a lot on a bunch of our projects. She hooked up with, didn't hook up, but met up with Ray Robinson. He's a local producer and director, and they clicked. And so they team up whenever they can.
Yeah.
He brought me to Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Brad reached out to Ray. He's like, I just need someone that knows how film works so I can have someone I trust on set.
Yeah.
And I worked myself up from grip to lighting technician to camera operator, special effects makeup. I did sound mixing and boom operating. Like, I did everything except hair, makeup, and wardrobe.
Right. Which is not something you really wanted to do anyway.
Not really.
You did all the stuff you wanted to do.
But so, and that's the thing is, like, now I can understand what each department needs to do their job.
Yeah.
Right.
And where you're pushing too far and where you can ask a little more. And that's how you build a schedule and you build a set that works well and communicates well and everyone knows what they need from each other. And then, you know, I get everyone to feed me what they need to get their job done, and then I can disseminate to everyone else. So we have a working day, and it's fun. It's a job that not a lot of people like, and somehow I love it, and I kind of thrive in it. But I'm about ready to take that next step to actually, you know, producing and directing something of my own.
Good,
right?
Like, yeah,
that's what I'm waiting for.
And it all comes down to finding that money, you know. Having something that you can show someone that says, "Hey, look, we can make a movie, and it'll sell. People will watch it.
Yes.
And you'll at least get your money back. Mm-hmm. I probably won't. But you'll get yours back.
Yeah. But Mr. Investor, you're solid. Yeah. But, well, I don't know. Anymore, though, you can produce something, and if it's got enough production value, you can get it on streaming a lot easier than you used to be able to.
Yeah. And honestly, like, Amazon Prime does awesome for independent filmmakers.
Yeah.
Because
there's like four movies I've watched that were filmed here that are on Amazon Prime. I mean, not filmed at my house.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
in the state of Oregon.
Filmed in my bedroom. There's four that you can find on Amazon.com.
Really? That's it? Starring Matty J.
They canceled me after four.
Soaking.
It's a quadrilogy. It's a thing I started.
Quadrilogy.
But the thing about that is, like, the viewers, they've already bought Prime. So everything's free to them, right?
Mm, right.
So they take a bigger chance on watching things they wouldn't typically watch.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
When you're on some of the other rental services like iTunes or Vudu or, you know, anything where you have to pay to rent each movie independently, that's where, you know, the studio films are still going to rule those areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Tubi. Tubi.com is another one that's ad-supported, so it's free.
Right.
You know?
Now, is...
People
I know,
making
like
way
I
more money off that.
Well, IMDb was doing a free thing. Are your films getting put onto their channel when they come out, or is it more just Amazon?
You know, I don't know, because Amazon owns IMDb now.
Oh.
Because I know, like,
so
for example,
from the Amazon catalog,
every time I'm trying to show somebody something that's not on most streaming, I'll go to Amazon, and then I'll go to the IMDb section.
You mean your home movies?
Yeah. Those four quadrilogy.
His home movies.
I had Janet Jackson sing the song Quadrilogy.
What genre are those?
What genre is that?
Gonzo porn.
And what genre is soaking?
Is that like gonzo journalism?
Mormon soaking gonzo
That's
porn.
What I don't get. Like, gonzo journalism, Hunter S. Thompson, was like, you do a bunch of drugs and you write the wrong article for whatever.
Right. You write the wrong headline. The
gonzo porn, article. There's no drugs. Like, what? Gonzo porn is supposed to be like you do the wrong sex act on a bunch of drugs. And that's not what gonzo porn was.
I know. It's ripping off the name.
Anyway, I had a story about Besetman. I totally forgot what it was. There was
something. You were talking about that was your first one that was coming out through the streaming, right? No.
But anyways, it's a great film. Check it out on stream.
I
you said
it.
That
it
was
good.
The one.
What's it called?
That was the one we liked.
I've seen it. I've watched it. It was a really good movie.
What's it called again?
It was really good.
Besetment.
Besetment.
It was really good, man. I don't want to tell you about it, but it was like...
The path of the righteous man is beset.
It was some shit that could really... If it had more money, that shit could be... That was a good movie.
That's what sometimes happens with movies, though. You know, you make an independent version of it, and then somebody sees it.
Yeah.
Sometimes contacts you for the rights to remake it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what was cool about that is we filmed it in Mitchell, Oregon. This is a town, you know, it's maybe an hour drive from my hometown that I grew up in, but out in eastern Oregon, that's nothing. You know, we used to play them in 1A basketball and 7-man football. And it was like the closest, like, I was back home doing this shit that never thought in a million years I could do coming out of Condon, Oregon, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
Straight out of Condon.
Straight out of Condon.
Condom?
With an brother named Levi.
Condom. Condom, Oregon. You're very protected there.
Straight out of Condon.
It's probably the safest town in Oregon, right? It is. It is the safest town in Oregon. They put us in the Oregonian twice. Safest town in Oregon, Condon, Oregon.
Really? And where is that at?
And both times, it was a string of burglaries the next week.
Oh, my gosh.
The town where no one locks their doors.
I love it when they come out with that shit.
Well, we do now, you assholes.
There was an article that came out in an episode of the Mail Tribune's monthly thing. This was like a couple years ago, and it was like most dangerous cities to live. Mm-hmm. And Medford came up on one of the lists. I was like, you motherfuckers have never been anywhere if you think Medford is crazy.
That's hilarious.
Like, if honestly, if Medford freaks you out, I want to take you to a couple places and just watch your ass bitch out.
Exactly.
Well, and that I grew up really sheltered. I have the white privilege, you know.
I have the white privilege.
I have it.
The struggles.
I have it in the side room.
Like, it's in a safe.
I keep it in the fridge. Privilege. So it doesn't go stale.
People think Medford's the scariest place. I was walking down Houston in like the middle of the night, like a dumbass, because I don't feel like anything could ever happen to me.
Yeah,
shit. Houston is hardcore.
Like, that guy must be fucking crazy to be walking here by himself.
Fucking hardcore.
I did that in Mexico one time. I was just kind of drunk and it was super late, and I was walking and I was kind of mad about something, and I sort of was just walking wherever I wanted to go. Uh-oh. And I'm in like, I started in Cabo. But very quickly, if you walk,
you walked up in Tijuana. Yeah,
if you walk from Cabo, you very quickly wind up in a place called San Jose, which is like, San Jose is like the LA of Mexico. It's like a sprawling valley kind of town, and there's a lot of stuff, but it's not a touristy place, you know. And so I'm just, it's sort of like walking between Simi Valley. you just don't do it late at night, you know?
Yeah, I learned not to walk through Juarez with my video camera in my
hand. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, no, we'll take you, we'll take you.
Yeah, there's we'll take you.
Get in my cab, we'll take you to the real part of the city.
Come on, my friend.
I'm with Vice. I'm doing a documentary on drugs.
My friend.
How many Vice cameramen do you think are actually dead?
Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
That didn't make it into the expose, you know? Yeah. Like, they just have a disposable list of cameramen. They keep sending them in until one's finally successful. They're like, oh, yeah, this Grant Hamilton kid, he made it.
Yeah. Well, now they just record the streaming. So it's like, you roll cameras, we're going to record it back here in the studio.
We're going to mail you the camera. Exactly. We won't be in the room. So to you, what's your favorite, I guess, scene that you've done or been involved with?
I could go really goofy and funny and like that, but honestly, so we worked with Shirley Knight, who's an actress, on this film Redwood Highway. Gary Lundgren and Annie Lundgren directed and produced, and we were talking actually about Adam Sandler earlier. And this was probably off camera, and how much fun his movies are to work on. Shirley Knight had worked with him. She's like, yeah, I did drama my whole life. So we did this film. She's the grandma that the son has put her in kind of retirement village, and granddaughter's getting married, and everyone she feels like has given up on her and just is like casting her away. And so she just takes off and hikes all the way to the Oregon coast, but no one knows where she is. And this manhunt to find her. And it was really cool. And I really loved working with her. So I took her out to dinner after we wrapped, and she still didn't give it up. But because I was taking her dinner on a sound mixer salary, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you went to KFC.
Or a boom operator salary. Kent Romney was a sound mixer. Sorry, Kent, to steal your thunder. But she talked about Adam Sandler. It's a family. Every time he does a movie, like, he called her up to do these comedies. She's like, I never done comedy before, but Adam Sandler makes everyone feel like family, and so it's so fun. She's like, I'll never not work with him. Her voice is prettier than that. But anyway, so we're getting a chance to work with Shirley Knight now, and we do a scene at It's a Burl, and I think Kirby on the way to Cave Junction. Yep.
Weird little naughty hole in the wall.
Genital warts of trees that they turn into artwork. And she has a scene with Tom Skerritt. And they're up in a treehouse, and we're filming this treehouse, and it's her and Tom Skerritt, and they're just having this emotional moment, and I'm just sitting there, you know, boom mic overhead, and it's a movie, right? Well, they are so into this, and they're such good fucking actors that tears are just running down my face, and I've only cried at one movie in my life at this point, you know?
But you have to be silent.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're running the fucking mic.
And I can't be like, hobbing and jiggling the boom pole either. It's like, Kent Romney's on. Handling noise, Levi, handling noise. Hold that boom stiff.
Right.
It's a good term for right.
work. Hold that boom stiff, boy.
It really like,
that in the bedroom.
And that was like, it's a testament to their performance and to like really great actors that can just pull you into a moment, even when you're surrounded by everything else that.
Yeah.
Like, you know it's fake because you're making the movie.
But in that moment, it feels real. Fake.
Right.
In that moment, it's really real. And it was a kind of a magical moment. I was like, this is fucking beautiful.
You're like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
And awesome. My mom finds out later, you worked with Tom Skerritt and you didn't call me.
Right. Oh, my mom's hilarious about stuff like that. I remember the first time I told her I was working with Carl. You're working with Carl? I was like, now you care because you've heard about somebody.
Carl Winslow?
My mom was the same way.
Uncle Carl?
Carl Winslow?
My mom was the same way. She knew about every actor that ever existed, I swear. Yeah. She would know about everybody. Yep.
No, she was funny though. I think my mom, the reason why she was stoked I was working with Carl is just because like her friends were like diehard Chadwicks fans, and mm-hmm. at the time they would go to both Friday and Saturday. They'd watch the comics on both nights, and I was like, "Oh, right, that's a super fan, you know, for sure."
Yeah.
And so
nobody does that.
She was really excited because it's like, "Oh, my baby's doing comedy, and my friends are gonna see him. It's on a stage they know, that's and everything." Awesome. And I was like, "Yeah, I'm doing a show with Carl," and she's like, "Oh."
She just popped.
You're doing a show with Carl?
Carl?
Your dad?
Like, yeah, Carl? You know Carl at Chadwick's? Like, you're doing a show at Chadwick's? I'm like, no, I asked Carl if he wants to do some shows with us, and then, like, he's asked me if I want to do some shows, right. So we're kind of doing a little co-op thing. And she was just like, well, are they going to censor you? I love that was her reaction. That's was like, hilarious. They're going to censor you. I know it.
Man. My mom got all wet when she heard I worked with Bill Pullman. She's like, tell me when you work with Kevin Costner. Because my dad used to look like Kevin Costner.
Oh, that's funny.
This film coming up in October, November, she's like.
So now you're casting shit based on mom's thirst level.
Well, I don't do the casting. That's the other problem. Everyone asks me to put them in my movies. I'm like, I don't do the casting.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
But she's like, is there anyone in this movie coming up that I should come down and see?
I'm like, sleep with?
I come down and see. Sleep with?
Yeah. Oh,
God. Yeah, should I come down and roofie?
I'm like, I'm in the movie, Mom. You made me want to come see me once in a while. Yeah, no. I'm in the movie this time.
I meant someone interesting.
You know, yeah, sorry. Man. Never mind.
No one can roast you like your mom, no. You know? Like, man, if your mom's got a sense of humor, no one can roast you like that. I mean, just take the wind out of your sails.
I knew you when your penis was this big, and I still know you when your penis is this big.
And I thought it would grow one day, but I guess sometimes mothers are wrong.
It did grow that one time you let your friend Eric sleep over, and that was interesting to mom.
Oh, Lord.
So, speaking of that, how does someone see the films that you and your friends make? Mm-hmm. No, like if somebody wanted to watch some of the stuff. So, I mean, obviously you can go to YouTube and find
Amazon Prime, guys.
But Amazon Prime, is that the number one place to go?
And that is the thing. They're kind of all over the place because each production's a little different independent film. So
I know Ron has his own YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm. Tunnel 13 Films.
Mm-hmm. Tunnel 13 Films.
Joma Films, that's the Lundgren family. They're the ones that produced a couple of features here in Southern Oregon.
Dolph Lundgren from Rocky IV.
Shane Brook Media.
No, it's not.
Who we're working with now, but I put together beavermedia.net.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so I just have the homepage right there is just links to all the films we work on. Beavermedia.
That's actually got Beaver all your Media. Projects, right?
Anything I've ever been a part of.
There we go.
Even if I'm just the sound, if I'm the boom op.
Our punk asses are even on that, I think.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Well, I got a page for podcast production. Yeah. So if anyone's looking for a podcast to be produced.
Thanks to us, we made. We gave Levi a whole new angle of.
So it's not. I don't have my own production company for films, but I wanted to make a hub where I could just tell people because I don't. You know, some of these are on Tubi, some are on Amazon, some are on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Just check it out, and there's something for everyone. There's even family films, if you can believe it.
Damn,
right.
You know, we made a Christmas movie years ago, and
check it out.
Well, the other thing that people don't know about you also is you worked in addition to just those kind of films. You also did some comedy shorts as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like short little things that you've done throughout the year. So I don't know. Are those also linked to that? Or is that more like, oh, I only let certain people see that?
Funny as L. We did those skits for a while. We would get together once a week and just do like 3 or 5 skits. So those are on levianderson.com under my comedy page.
That's hilarious.
See, that's what I'm trying to get him to say the real stuff. He doesn't want to admit it. He's just like,
I'm all over the place. That's one thing they always say is like, find something. That one thing that you love and do it really well. And I'm like, I love
but
a,
I
lot,
like
of
a
things.
Lot of stuff. Yeah, that's how polygamy happens. Speaking of Mormon stuff.
Soaking.
Circle soon. Back.
Yeah, Beaver Media and levianderson.com.
There we go. Nice.
But beavermedia.net. Sorry, I think I said .com earlier.
Yeah, you did. Beavermedia.net. Yeah.
That might be an AVN.
German company has the .com.
Put the beaver in the net.
And it's a very different site.
Yeah.
That's more like the films I used to make.
Not as exciting as you would hope, though.
Yeah. Like the films I used to make.
They're like an architectural company or something in Germany. I don't know. It's in Dutch.
Well, man, we appreciate you what you do for us here.
And yes, sir,
people
buddy.
That are Huge. Watching and listening don't know what Levi does. Levi is primarily responsible for putting everything together, all the visual, all the audio, everything you see if you're watching YouTube. He's switching cameras back and forth. He's doing a lot of the captions and the little tags and things that pop up visually.
Giving us shit for what we say on here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so it's important to give props to the man that, you know, makes a lot of this stuff happen behind the scenes. We appreciate you for sure. And I know we talked about having you on and talking about movies a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, so, Dad.
Yep.
Is there anything else you want to plug or talk about?
Yeah, she's texting me right now. So.
Oh, always a comedian.
Perfect.
She's like, what are you still doing?
Should I really call her out? This is our narrator.
Yeah, that's right.
Our narrator.
Yeah.
That's right. And in case you're wondering, Levi Anderson has a huge cock and a magic tongue. But back off, boys and girls. That one's taken.
So Levi is actually sleeping with somebody on the show.
This is the nepotism of the film.
Nepotism.
World.
Yeah. Exactly. That's hilarious.
And it's not one of us three.
None of
Spoiler
us.
Alert.
No, I did. I tried doing the narration for the first episode.
Yeah.
Guys, welcome to Hugglproof Comedy Podcast.
Yeah, yeah, we had this very like loony WKRP almost is what it reminded me of. Mm-hmm. Like, welcome to Hugglproof Podcast.
Wait, Harry Carey.
Yeah, there was
Harry
definitely Carey. Some Harry Carey.
Hugglproof Comedy Podcast.
You just love it.
It's the bottom of the ninth. We're back with Hugglproof.
Here comes Levi.
The podcast.
Pinch hitting for the guys.
Yeah. Now you know the rest of the story.
No, so we appreciate you, man. And
yeah. Most definitely, man.
Check out Beaver Media. And we know we've been on hiatus for a little while. And you guys have been waiting for some new content. So hopefully.
Carl would stop blowing up.
There you go.
Yeah, if Carl's comedy career could just crash and burn, that would be really helpful for us.
Carl's been popping since he was on Last Comic Standing 35 years ago.
Sorry.
He's just trying to build on a 35-year-old foundation.
He's literally the Last Comic Standing. Nobody from those shows are standing anymore.
They're all dead now.
They're all in wheelchairs. None of them stand.
They're all in wheelchairs or walkers. It's the Last Comic moaning.
Yeah. Carl won. Carl, you won it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I remember the first time when you really broke out. You know, it was a Sermon of the Mound, and there was so many people there to see you.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing. Jesus said he would hire him back. He did. He said he was a great opener.
Can you open this for me, Carl?
Yeah, I got you.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Thanks, Hugglproof.
You can find us at HugglproofPodcast.com and everywhere where fine podcasts are streaming. And please do tell your friends and families and or enemies about us.
See you next time.
Peace.
Don't forget to like and subscribe and follow us wherever fine podcasts are streaming. Well, I like that's right part. I'm just trying to figure out where to put it. Just right before I say your cock is so huge. Or where?